Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Well, hello and welcome to Aggressive Negotiations. We're just so excited to be here and, well, we're going to be making you an offer you can't refuse. We're going to be talking about Solo and the music and why it's so awesome. And I
can't do this alone, so, and I'm not going to do that voice the whole time, but that lets you know a little bit what John and I were talking about before we started the show, because we were basically recorded a whole other podcast before this one, just by the geek conversations that we were having. John, how's it going, man?
If I had a conciliary like Zero the Hutt, a wartime conciliary, we wouldn't be in this mess. Ah, man, I'm sorry.
Can you imagine a conciliary like Zero the Hutt? Like, oh my gosh,
that would be
so awesome.
That would be
you just can't come to Las Vegas and talk to him like that.
I think you're absolutely right. I think Zero is the Fredo of the Hutt clan.
He is the Fredo
of the Hutt clan. Wow, that so totally works, especially because the way that
really
Jabba buys it is done as an
homage.
Wow. There you go. We have unlocked another connection.
We totally have. well, and you know, it's so funny. I just thinking through, you know, with Clone Wars 10 and how George really dove into the whole connection between the cinema that he loved and, you know, connecting that with Star Wars and seeing how far he could go with that. It really does make sense, you know, that you would see some of those connections with friends of his. You know, obviously Coppola, huge influence on him. So, you know, The Godfather and seeing some of those kind of things play into the crime syndicates that we got, you know, fantastic. And obviously, you know, we'll be talking about the music of Solo, but that plays heavily into the ideas of Solo all the crime syndicates. And so, we're super excited to be here. Obviously, Aggressive Negotiations, that little corner of the Star Wars galaxy that is coming actually from Las Vegas this week is, you know, Zero gave us a really nice deal on a hotel room. So, and some extra credits, you know. And
yes.
So. But the best thing about this is you can find us all over the place, wherever you get your podcasts, Aggressive Negotiations. But like all the good people who entered our review contest, hit us up on iTunes. iTunes is the place. In fact, you know what? I want to encourage you, if you're not subscribed to the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you subscribe to Aggressive Negotiations, because you will get it the moment it's published. And that way you've always got Aggressive Negotiations with you wherever you go. We've also got our Twitter that you should be following at the Jedi Masters, so make sure you're doing that as well. You can find us, the entire network of the Nerd Party, over on at Join Nerd Party on Twitter. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/the Nerd Party, which is a great place to like us. You can see all the shows that are coming out. You can interact with all the hosts from the different shows. When we post our show there, I know John and I love interacting with the listeners. So say whatever it is you want to say about the show. We will definitely respond to you. We love having great conversation. And then, you know, you can find thenerdparty.com, which has obviously all of the shows we do. The blog is back, which is great as well. And you can also find a place where you can write us emails, and that's at thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose a show. Choose Aggressive Negotiations. And then the email comes to John and I, and we can talk to you that way, too. So, as I mentioned, John, we had the review contest.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through and I counted all the reviews we got. We got 19 reviews, which, wow, thank you so much. You know, honestly, not far from where we wanted to be with 30 reviews. But we decided it was time to go ahead and end this because we wanted to give away our loot. And so what I did, every review has a number. And so I have put those numbers into the random generator over there on Google, 1 out of 19. And so whichever one Google picks, that will be the winner. And so here we go. Oh, look at that. It's actually number one.
Number one?
Number one.
You've got to be kidding
and that's,
me.
It, no. That's
amazing.
The one it picks.
Google, you did it again.
You did it again, Google. So, Alexa, call Luna Rose 713. You are the winner of our loot. And so, what we need you to do, as I mentioned, go over to thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose aggressive negotiations. Send us your address so that we can send out your Star Wars prize pack. We are ecstatic that you have won. In fact, actually, Luna Rose was actually the first person in the review contest, and they had given us 5 stars, and they told us thank you for making them a better nerd. And so, you know what? We appreciate the fact that you listened and you went and reviewed us. It meant a lot to us. In fact, I reread all the reviews today because I had to go back and renumber them. And your review definitely still touches our hearts. So thank you so much for doing that for us. I mean, gosh, you know, taking out your time, it means a lot to us.
And all of the reviews mean a lot to us. As you guys know, podcasting is... it's not a lucrative hobby, but we really appreciate, like we genuinely appreciate, we wish we were in a position where everybody who gave a review could get something, but all we can offer everybody is our deepest gratitude, our most sincere thanks, because we truly, deeply appreciate not just that you gave a review, but that you listened to us. And, you know, if you are listening to us and you missed this round or whatever, we would still appreciate a review, because our goal is to, as we've said, to spread the Star Wars love. And the way that the Star Wars love gets spread is if Apple Podcasts and other services recognize us and put us in recommendations. And the way that happens is when you give positive reviews and ratings to shows. So it does the job of spreading the word. And our whole mission statement for this show is to bring the Star Wars love to the world. And thank you for helping us do that. We truly, sincerely appreciate it.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you missed out on the review contest here, we will probably do another one. But if you're over on Twitter and you're not following the Jedi Masters at the moment, find the tweet where there is a nice picture of a pop figure. It's a Gamorrean guard that's actually retired now from Funko, and we're giving that away. So all you have to do is follow us and retweet that tweet, and you'll be entered to win that as well. So got a little fun contest going over there on Twitter. Make sure you check it out, and we're giving that away at the end of the month. So that's another way to help spread the love, because our goal, as well as we interact with fans on Twitter, is also to make sure that we are spreading the love there. And we just want to be a positive light in fandom in all that we do. And so I think, John, we're going to be able to do that tonight as well, as we dive into the score for Solo, which both of us, I mean, right up front, we have not been shy in saying how much we loved. And, you know, I was going back and I listened to the score quite a few times today. I didn't listen to much else today. I just kind of had it on repeat, kind of letting the themes kind of soak in. And I wanted to ask you, because I don't think we've had a real in-depth conversation about this, but just at the beginning, you know, obviously John Williams was the one who created the theme for Han Solo, which he had never done before. I mean, and outside of, you know, Han and Leia's theme, which is very closely connected to, you know, Luke and Leia's theme, you know, they feel quite similar. So this was the first time that Han himself got his own kind of hero's theme.
Yeah.
And what did you think about that theme, you know, getting the soundtrack, getting to listen to it, and then, of course, hearing the way it was worked into the film?
Well, I think it's very much worth stating that you and I approach soundtrack listening a bit differently with films.
Yes.
I will purposely avoid listening to the soundtrack for a film before I see the film. Specifically because, you know, I have a whole rationale behind it. I won't bore everybody with it. But there's also the vestigial memory of picking up that episode one. How many people can say I picked up that episode one soundtrack and saw Qui-Gon's noble end and said, really, really, guys, you couldn't make more effort than that. So I'm sure that has some sort of subconscious thing with it where, like, I'm walking through and I see a soundtrack. And I'm like, no, must not look. So my first encounter with any of the music was opening night, Thursday night, 7 p.m. show, sitting in the theater and hearing it cue up. And I still remember feeling the little smile tug on my face because I said, internally, I really like this. This is really something. And it built through the entire film and the entire score. And then when I got home and I bought the soundtrack, immediately I went to iTunes. I got the soundtrack. I downloaded it. And I spent weeks basically listening to it several times a day. It proved dangerous while I was driving to listen to certain tracks because you get lost in that. You speed a little bit. But I know that this is a very long way of saying that I instantly fell in love with the score, and I think Hans' theme is terrific because of the fact that we have had Williams making new themes for Episode 7 and Episode 8, and I like what he did. I really do like Rey's theme. I really do like what he did for the First Order and stuff like that. But Hans' theme felt like a return to the music that I first fell in love with. There is something about it that just hits that note, you know, pardon the turn of phrase.
You know, yeah, and as you mentioned, you know, I am different than you in that I do always, pretty much always, listen to the score before I see the movie. If it's a movie like this or, you know, like, a Jurassic Park or, you know, any of those kind of things. Like, I love listening to the score because, for me, it gives me the appreciation of how it plays in the film. And for the most part, I don't think I've ever seen a score track that really ruins anything anymore. I think everybody in the world learned their lesson after Episode 1 to not let that happen again. But, I remember just listening to the music prior to the film and really enjoying the theme for Han because it has this sense of adventure. It has this sense of whimsy to it. It has this sense of, you know, the feeling of a serial. And then it also has this detection of like a melancholy section, you know, when you get into the middle of it. And then, of course, it comes out of that. But there is this whole... What it felt like to me, the theme for Han, and especially the way that then Powell works that in throughout the score, it's the internal struggle almost of Han, of desiring the adventure, desiring freedom, but also going through all of these things that kind of keep putting him down. Mm-hmm. And the melancholy that comes with that and the temperedness that we'll get, you know, it almost felt like the emotional journey of Han in this film to be kind of become the slightly more cynical version than we had at the beginning. And so in some ways, I felt like Williams is able to tap into that with the theme. And then Powell is able to use that so masterfully throughout the rest of the score. They really worked in tandem together in a way that I don't think that I felt like that really had experienced since Kiner, honestly, reworking Williams' themes, but then also adding his own themes, especially with what, you know, we got with Clone Wars and then, you know, Rebels, I think, of some of those great themes. And so, yeah, I think Williams I don't want to be mean, but I feel as though Williams saw the film and was very inspired because the theme for Han sounds inspired.
Yes, I agree with you on that read for it. It feels like just like the film does. And if anybody listening has not seen the film yet, please. I mean, I can't get it into the theater for you, but trust me, I'll take the Pepsi challenge with it. You're going to love it, you know, and I think that part of what the theme, what you immediately get with it is the fact that Williams responded in a way that the rest of us did to seeing it. And how much it harkened back to what made us fall in love with everything in the first place. And another thing that I noticed about Han's theme, which the very first track is called The Adventures of Han, is it actually ends in a way that is very similar to the way the Superman theme ends from 1978, where the concert suite for the Superman theme ends in a very similar fashion. And that is sort of a hallmark of old school Williams of ending strong. Like if you listen to the Raiders March, if you listen to Superman, if you listen to the concert suite for the original Star Wars, there's a certain way that he ends it, that there's this really resolute punch at the end. And that comes back. So in a sense, it's almost as if Williams, who has become taken for granted in terms of film composition, it's almost as if Williams rediscovered what made him so magical as well. Like it tapped into something in Williams that is both a part of and separate from Star Wars. And I know it seems like I'm heaping a whole lot of praise, but I really think The Adventures of Han deserves that praise. And to your point about Powell, I think that what he did with this is, you also mentioned Kiner, very similar to what Kiner was able to do with some of the early Clone Wars work, where there were familiar cues worked in there, but in such a way that it made them feel fresh again. It made them feel unique to this. And I think that Powell does that because, like any score, the theme in Solo, is repeated. The whole leitmotif thing. But he also brings in other stuff that supports it and makes it feel very much a part of this universe, this galaxy, this universe, however you want to state it. And it carries through because here on the soundtrack, Meet Han is... And I think it was actually somebody that we're both connected to on Twitter, Galandro1, who pointed out that if you listen to The Adventures of Han and then Meet Han, which are the first two tracks on the soundtrack, you hear what a difference two different composers, like they're treating the same music, and you hear this distinct difference, this different treatment of the same music, and you hear what makes it special is that they can both bring their own flair to it.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that because, you know, Williams' version seems to be the ultimate hero version of this. And when you get to Meet Han, it's almost the grittier version of it. You know, it's slightly more muted in its tones. It doesn't have quite the same punch, but it's also fitting the action here of a Han who's scrambling, who, you know, is very much on the low end of the totem pole, you know, in his world. Mm-hmm. And it fits the action so well, so that it really feels like the whole point of this film is to grow to what Williams created. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to hear that immediately, especially in the cue Meet Han, which is the first track in the film, is where you know you meet Han and he's trying to start the speeder and he's trying to get away, and you know he then meets Kira, and which is such great music because it. I mean, and the best part about, I think, about the soundtrack is one, that it's linear,
mm-hmm.
So the progression of the plays with the progression of the film. So, you know, when you roll into the Corellia chase, I mean, this is just such a bombastic, fun chase scene track. It feels up there, I think, with some of the best chase music that Williams was able to create. And yet it has its own flavor. Like, John Powell was able to take the Williams style, but also give it his flair. And that's what makes this special, is it's not just a rehash of Williams, but it has enough uniqueness to make it stand out. And that's exactly what you want in one of these Star Wars stories.
You know what? I want to bounce an idea off of you in terms of the way that the soundtrack works with the way Powell does it. There is a sense to me that if you take Meet Han and Corellia Chase, and, you know, take Adventures of Han, Meet Han, Corellia Chase, there's almost the feel of the Raiders soundtrack, because you have the march.
Ooh, yeah.
And then you have the way it actually opens in the film, and then you have the escape from the temple. And there's a flow there that seems to work. So whoever produced this album, I would love to talk to them and find out if that was... I mean, obviously, like you said, it's linear progression and everything, but there still seems to be a decision here to make it... They could have put The Adventures of Han at the end and just started with Meet Han, you know? So there's an interesting thing there. I'd love to see if that echo was intentional.
Yeah, that's a... And I mean, you know, one of the things I noticed about the film, too, was the fact that it has a lot of spiritual connections with the Indiana Jones films.
Yeah.
In the way in which the character of Han is kind of portrayed here, just by himself, and then, of course, with Chewie, he feels almost like an Indiana Jones-style character, you know, and they have their MacGuffin, which ends up being, you know, The hyperfuel. Yes, thank you. I don't know why my brain went completely blank.
No. But, don't say that. Don't say that.
Oh yeah.
Take it over. Just say hyperfuel.
The hyperfuel, the coaxium, which, you know, they're after, and then which also happens with the Indiana Jones films, where you think you're on one mission, but you end up on being on another, you know,
right?
Because there's something more important that you didn't realize, and so I think that's the thing that this movie owes a lot to the Indiana Jones films, and there's absolutely 100% nothing wrong with that. You know, I mean, even the Empire turns into the Nazis in this film in some ways. It's great. The beginning of this soundtrack is just fantastic, and I think it really lets you know that what you're in for, because of the way that the tones are, the way the music is coming off, you really are in for a action adventure serial. Like, that's what the flavor they're going for.
Yeah, and I think that actually the next track, you know, Spaceport, the music there really is the first time, I think, where Powell is able to, like, it feels like he's moving beyond the Williams theme and doing his own thing. And I think that the cue for that is great. But as great as it is, I think when you get on the soundtrack and you get to Flying with Chewie, is magical, especially. And I every time I saw the film, because I did see it more than once in the theater, as many of us did, there is this changeover that happens, this transition that happens when the ship has gotten to, I can't recall the name of it right now, the train heist planet, and Han and Chewie walk out, and they're just looking out over the mountains, talking, you know, and it's, oh, Chewbacca, oh, we're going to have to find a nickname for you. The music there is so beautiful. It's so touching. It's so wonderful. And what I think is most magical about the cue is the fact that if you just listen to the music, it's telling you right there of what we all pick up on through the whole arc of Han, is that at his core, he treats everybody like a decent human being. He treats everybody like a person. He treats everybody on their own terms. He doesn't ever interact with anybody as if they're a representative of a group or anything like that. And I do think that music from Flying with Chewie, that when it transitions over to them talking together, I think Powell does something special, because you hear something sweet it betrays how sweet Han is at his core, that he always wants to love and help somebody. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I was also thinking that, you know, it's really the first time that we've gotten a theme for Chewie. You know, having a theme that kind of represents him. And to me, I think the film also does a good job of, with it, this music, representing the spirit of who Chewbacca is as well. The sense of adventure and the sense of purity that is in Chewie, you know, as a character. Like, he doesn't want to be the person who was, you know, stuck in a mud hole,
right?
Having to eat people to survive, you know, like, that's not who he is, you know. And so I also think it's that music that is so beautifully created to give you the sense of this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship, you mm-hmm. know. And the music just, I don't know, there's something about it. It's that classic kind of hero feel that we're getting from both of these characters coming together to form a partnership that's going to, you know, kind of last a lifetime. And so it really, Powell's able to do something here where he creates a theme that is very much his own for this. And
yeah.
It fits the moment, and I think it fits both of the characters, you know, quite perfectly.
I agree, and I think that it also marks a point, because, you know, when you have and you're looking at the soundtrack and you see, Flying with Chewie, and then, Spaceport, and then Flying with Chewie seem to act as a duology, the same way that Meet Han and Corellia Chase act as, you know, a twosome, mm-hmm. a duet, if you will. Train Heist and Marauders Arrive are obviously, again, we have the two cues that work together specifically because they're tied to the way that the action happens in the film. And I think Train Heist is a terrifically fun track. It's wonderful, fun music to listen to. But I'm sort of chomping at the bit to get to Marauders Arrive, because I think that the Marauders and Enfys Nest music, almost everything else in the soundtrack feels, you know, with the exception of the transition we just talked about with Flying with Chewie, Powell, I think, does something absolutely magical with the Marauders Arrive, the Marauders theme, it's like an audio cue of the reveal that we get later in the film. And now, because we're talking about the soundtrack and everything, and I know we made reference earlier, if you haven't seen the film, you should see it. We are feeling free to be in spoilerish territory. So just so you know, I'm about to make a reference to the end of the film. But I think if you listen to the music in Marauders Arrive, I think it's a beautiful audio hint as to what the reveal is going to be about Enfys Nest at the end. Because there is a youngish feel to the music for Marauders Arrive that is, in a sense, incongruous with the threat that they pose to Han and Tobias and everybody. You know, like, it's really thrilling. It's really great music.
Yeah.
But there's a childlike nature to it that betrays the fact that Enfys Nest is young and a girl. You know, like, there's this childlike female nature to the music.
You know, the thing that really always jumps out to me the most about this theme is how much it feels like it came from the Clone Wars. And the type
yes.
of music that Kiner created, you know, I mean, we just did the commentary for the Clone Wars movie, which, you know, the stuff on Teth, which mm-hmm. has the vocals like this. And it also feels connected with some of the vocals that Williams used in the prequel series.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I feel like there is a really nice progression. And he uses, it almost feels like as though the costuming and kind of that almost native type feel to the costumes allows you to have the kind of sound to which that is going to reveal them as well. All of it to me works just as what Williams did to create. It's the music and the visuals that all work in concert together to create the character. You know, like the music now is simultaneous with Enfys Nest. Mm. You know, anytime I've got the Enfys Nest pop on my shelf, I've got the Lego set with her, you know, speeder. And every time I see that music kind of is in my head, you know, and so that just goes to show you, in the same way you kind of see Vader and you automatically think that the Imperial March, you know, this music is so iconic, and it's only used with those characters, you know, her and her marauders. And so, I think it's a masterful piece of craftsmanship to create a sound for these characters that makes you think these characters, in the same way that, you know, some of the themes you get in like the Clone Wars specifically tie to certain planets. You know, George wanted certain planets to have their own sound. So like Rodia has its own sound. Ryloth will have its own sound, those kind of things. These characters, again, it's such a Williams thing to do, because Williams, especially in those original six soundtracks, you know, so much had its own sound. You even think about the we haven't done this yet, but the in Empire Strikes Back, where you have the chase through the asteroid field has its own music, you know.
Yeah, although that we will be referencing that shortly, but in terms of its own music, I cannot get enough of Marauders Arrive, because I think it's just so, it's so unique. It belongs so much to this group of characters. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I'm going to sit back at this point, because we're at the point in the soundtrack where we would then talk about Chicken in the Pot. And I know you have a special love for that track, so I'll let you take point on that one.
I really do, man, and I don't know what it is, but there's something about it, and I think what it is that John Powell was able to create something that was so memorable, in the same way when you heard the Cantina music in Star Wars, where it's just like, it's its own thing, and it immediately brings you into this world, and what I loved about it is it so fit the world of Dryden Vos and Crimson Dawn, which is this luxurious, you know, honestly, it feels a little bit more like the kind of music you might have heard possibly in, you know, our favorite Hutt's, you know, Zero's Lounge.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it has that, it's jazzy, it's sultry, it's sexy. And that's all. I mean, when you look around, all the people at Dryden's ship, they're all the most well-to-do. You know, they all have the finest garments on. They all, I mean, you know, they're sexy. You know, and so it's like there is this like wonderful noirish sexiness feel to this song. And it's so weird, because when you see the visuals to it, you know, you got that weird like frog like creature singing and everything, but the music itself just fits the scene so perfectly. And it also has that even Moroccan type feel, which makes you think of like Casablanca. So yeah, it's so well done.
And I think a testament to how well done it is the simple fact that the in the film, the floating in a tube creature or whatever, they pitch shift so that it becomes a more masculine voice, whereas on the soundtrack, it's two feminine voices. And I think that it's an interesting change. I think that I wish that I had both versions of it on the soundtrack, but I love the fact that, you know, I think it's a sign of truly great. It's almost like we have a cover song in the film of the original song that's on the album.
Yes.
And the mark of any truly great song is that it can be covered well. And I think that that speaks to the strength of the song. And in terms of the feel, and this is where I know I wade out into dangerous territory and everything, but, and I'm including, for instance, Java Flow from episode 7. This is the first time in the Disney era where I didn't feel like this ambient music was forced, where it felt truly a part of the character of the scene, where it felt like it belonged, where it wasn't somebody saying, we need a weird song here. It was some, and in episode 8, it's even Williams reworking a song that he had done in the past for Canto Bight. And so in this, I think we find something that is as unique and wonderful to me, whether you're talking about Jedi Rocks, the Cantina scene, or the original musical number in Return of the Jedi, this tickles the same sort of part of my brain that Lapte Nek tickles. And, you know, for that reason, I just think it's tremendous fun. I really do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the next track and then L3 and the Millennium Falcon kind of play off each other as well. And, you know, the seat is taken is this fun little vibrant track as they're going, you know, you have the tete-a-tete, the back and forth between Lando and Han, which is great. Yes. And the music kind of represents that. But, you know, I think it's L3 and the Millennium Falcon, you know, that really stands out. And it's because there is that just gorgeous piece of music as you are introduced, the Millennium Falcon, and Han immediately, and Chewie, they both just kind of like, oh, you know, they fall in love. It's love at first sight with this ship. And it oh, God, it's just great.
And the use of the Force theme, Luke's theme, the Star Wars theme, I mean, I know I had a friend who has had a problem with the fact that they used the Star Wars theme at certain points in this score. I disagree with it because it is the Star Wars theme now. It's not Luke's theme anymore. And they've made it was originally, you know, it was the Force theme, then it was Luke's theme, then it was the Star Wars theme, and it has a place here, and I love the way that it's used in L3 and the Millennium Falcon because of the fact that Han finally has his Jim Kirk moment from the motion picture. I get to see a captain look at his ship and have that music swell as he sees her and falls in love with her. And it's beautiful. And I don't know any other piece of music you could have used at that point that would have worked as well.
No, and I mean, I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's the same way that they did that in Star Trek 09, you know, when Kirk sees the Enterprise being built for the first time, he's on his bike, you know, and the beautiful music that Giacchino has created works so well in that moment, you know, and it creates that bond. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, I think for me, one of the things I absolutely adore about this score, and it's used a few times, but it starts with Lando's closet. And it's the love theme that he creates for Han and Kira. And there is such a 1940s, 1950s Humphrey Bogart, Cary Grant, you know, type movie. You know, you just imagine him, one of those leading men with their leading ladies. And that's exactly the type of theme that they're given here. And it just fits so perfectly. Yep. And it's used to perfection here in Lando's closet with their, you know, the building passion that they have, you know, and then it gets, of course, cut off when Beckett interrupts them. And then it's also used in testing alliances, testing allegiance, you know, as they, you know, Kira kind of professes, you know, her love for Han and the you know, the go, I'll be right behind you kind of thing. And it just, it's used to such perfection there as it fades off into, you know, her kind of betraying that, you know, and turning her back on Han for Crimson Dawn. And so it's one of the things that I love about this movie, because it truly, I feel like, embraces that old school Hollywood feel. And I absolutely adore it for that reason. You know, I think it's 100% perfect for the Star Wars universe. And that's exactly what John Williams did, and much of what he did for Star Wars was embracing that old Hollywood feel. And this film specifically embraces the action adventure, noir, and the romance of the 1940s in just such a perfect fashion.
Yeah, and you know, it's at this point that you know, I think that the score gets to the point we've been very carefully sort of like going through, but I think that at this point, after Lando's closet, is where there's almost a, even in terms of the film and in terms of the score, when you go with the next several tracks, from Mind Mission, Breakout, The Good Guy, Reminiscence Therapy, and Into the Maw, it's almost as if this is the score for its own short film from beginning to finish. So it's almost impossible, from my view, to talk about these tracks independently, because they are... I mean, you can literally, this is one of the most beautiful things about the film and about this score, is the way that certain pieces of the film and the score work. You could lift just these tracks out and you have your own short film, and it works completely well, and it works perfectly, and it is a stunning tribute, I think, to Powell's skills, in that he is able to construct something where there are so many soundtracks where if I were to take four tracks from one section and pull them out and listen to them, I could like them so long as I knew they were a part. You know, I'd be like, oh, you know, these are, you know, this works as a part of, but this soundtrack transcends that. In the same sense that the Last of the Mohicans soundtrack, which that score I absolutely adore as well. And I can do the same thing that I can do here with Powell's work, especially in these tracks, where I can listen to this and know what part of the film is going. Even if I've never seen the film, I can hear a story in my head of what's happening over this course. And I think that is... Yeah. It's phenomenal.
No, I agree with you, because I think, you know, one of the things that's really interesting about Mind Mission is the way in which the heist sound starts, you know, it has some reminiscent refrains from the train heist, but it picks that back up and it really runs with that type of theme. And then, of course, you get the whole big blowout and breakout, which kind of just cracks that wide open, which I think is wonderful. And so, and the music, and this is the one thing too that I appreciate. You know, it is very difficult to make action music enjoyable to listen to a lot of times, but Williams was able to do it, and I really feel like Powell has found a way to make the action cues just as much fun to listen to as any of the other parts of the score, which I really appreciate. It's one of the reasons why I've listened to this score probably about 50 times since the movie has come out, you know, maybe more, because there are some days where it was just on repeat all day, you know? Because I wasn't getting tired of it. And I didn't get tired of it listening to it again today. And I legitimately didn't listen to much else but this, because we were going to be doing this show. And so that's a real hallmark of a soundtrack that has everything you need to be satisfied. And I feel like that's the great thing that Powell is able to do, with the help from Williams, with the Han theme, is to create something which feels like a cohesive whole. In the same way that those Star Wars soundtracks from the first six Star Wars movies really have that as well.
Yeah. And, you know, in terms of the listenability, I made reference to it before, but when I'm going, I do a lot of highway travel when I'm commuting, and I can tell you that Reminiscence Therapy and Into the Mall are dangerous tracks to listen to when you have open road in front of you. I live in a place where there's a lot of flat open road. Don't set cruise control before you start listening, because you can get in a bit of trouble listening to them. But Reminiscence Therapy, I fixate on it, and I fixate on Into the Mall as well for two reasons. Reminiscence Therapy has the cue from when, you know, Chewie takes the, and you know, I love the way that they reimagine the, you know, what's commonly thought of in our heads as the TIE fighter music, the dogfight music from the original Star Wars, but of course it's been reused many times throughout the saga, but the animated series as well. But I love the way it's used in Reminiscence Therapy. I love the way that, you know, certain Empire cues, the asteroid field comes back into play. But the Star Wars theme, the way it explodes when Chewie takes the seat, watching it in the theater, listening to it on the soundtrack, always gets me really a little, choked up, excited, however you want to state it, because it's such an audio declaration of how right the moment is. And you feel this swell of happiness and joy, which is exactly what the score is supposed to. You know, the Star Wars music has always been associated with joy, and to have it so blatantly expressed in that way, it's wonderful. And then Into the Mall, it's used the same way when the coaxium kicks in. And you realize this is Han has found his destiny. He's found his ship. He's found everything that's right about his life in these moments. Everything about Han that works, mm-hmm. works now. And I just love these. I just love them. Just love them.
You know, I absolutely agree with you. I think you picked up a key, which is when the Star Wars theme is played these days, it's something is going right. You know, like it's that, and that's why when Han Solo meets the Millennium Falcon for the first time with Chewie, it's that music. It's something's going right here. Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely onto something with that. I think that's a really, really nice pull. And it makes so much more sense as to why you would use that music for different things now that aren't just Luke Skywalker, because it brings you into that moment. In that way, and it makes you feel right, because that's what we all think of when we hear that music. Oh, something good is about to happen because it's Star Wars, and you know that's what we all feel when we start a new Star Wars movie, when we would hear that music. And so, and until that note was wrong, and that's a whole other story.
We'll get there. So we will get to that point when we discuss those soundtracks.
So, but no, I absolutely agree with you. The way that Reminiscence Theory and Into the Mall kind of work all this together. You know, he pretty much uses all the themes that he's created for the movie, except for the Marauders, and then works in all of these little fun nods to the different films that have to do with Han, really, mm-hmm. and flying the Millennium Falcon, and it makes it work. And I think it's just what it does is it creates a sense of fun to the whole scene. And to me, you know, having little allusions to what you get from A New Hope and from Empire Strikes Back, two movies to which Han is very much a part of, and so is the Falcon doing crazy things. I think this is the perfect place to be able to do that. And he doesn't overdo it. And that's the other thing. It's like, mm-hmm. it's just these nice little nods, and then we move on.
Well, what I think I think you hit on something there, where what you're talking about is when he reuses those themes, what he does is he repurposes things so that those themes are no longer the TIE fighter music or the asteroid belt. These are themes that are Han's flying themes. These are now reclaimed as part of Han's story. And so when I go back and I watch Star Wars now, I'm going to think of this as Han's music coming in to the story, as opposed to the reverse, which is very easy to think. And I think the trap that my friend falls in as saying this is Star Wars music and Empire music brought into a Solo movie. I think it successfully reclaims it and repurposes it in an important way that I now view this music as music belonging to Han and the Falcon.
Yeah. And I like that too. I mean, I think it's actually a very smart thing because, again, as we talked about, Han didn't have a theme until this film. And yet, I think, like you said, you get Powell taking these moments, which were so important with Han and the Falcon, and using them here, and it just makes it cohesive then as a musical landscape for Star Wars once you get to A New Hope and to Empire Strikes Back. And so I'm thinking that, you know, if you talk to John Powell, that's probably what he was thinking too. So I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I'm pretty sure it seems like if we can figure that out, he probably figured that out. So,
well, his medium to communicate to us was through his music. And so, you know, just I think you're right. And I think that it would be interesting to talk to him because this is how he talked to us, you know.
The other thing I really like is the Savarine standoff that we get to, and it's just such, I mean, this is the moment, too, where he kind of is able to tap into, and something we haven't mentioned about the score is that the music, not in the action-adventure serial, but it holds a lot of the feeling of the Western, which is huge influence on this movie. And so when we get to the Savarine standoff, we get that kind of eerie rendition of the Marauders theme, and it feels like a Western standoff because that's exactly what's happening. And so that's something that Powell really works in here. And, you know, it's the thing that it's so strange to think how many different types of scores Powell has worked into this movie, but they all kind of flow together and feel cohesive to me. I never am pulled out of a moment. It always just feels like the right choice, whether it feels like a Western, whether it feels like a noir movie, whether it feels like a 40s romance, or, you know, whether it feels like the action adventure serial. You know, you put all those things together, it creates the world which we are in with Han Solo, which makes sense because we're in the part of the Star Wars galaxy to which isn't completely under the thumb of the Empire and still has a little bit of individuality to it. It makes it a lively place to be, you know, and you never know what audio cue is going to fit that perfectly. And so that's the thing I think he does a really good job of.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And the thing is, there's always a part of my brain. It's so funny. It's almost like the way that we're all wired, where when I feel like I've agreed with you so much, there's a part of my brain that's like, I got to fight with him about something on here, but I can't. I just can't. And I think that in and of itself is another testament to how great the cues, like, you know, like Savarine standoff are, because it really does feel authentic and it really communicates something, so that even if, you know, this is going to sound really weird, but the Marauders theme and the Savarine standoff, they actually wind up reminding me of bits of Peter Gabriel's score for The Last Temptation of Christ, Passion. And, you know, setting aside any discussion of the film, that is a brilliant score as well. So in the same way that Kiner's work in Rebels, when the Lasat were going through the cloud, reminded me of Clint Mansell in The Fountain. The Savarine stuff reminds me of some of the more mystic sounding cues that Gabriel had in Passion, which, again, I have to underscore, if you haven't heard that score, please, I'll take the Pepsi challenge. Just buy it on iTunes and listen to it. Go for it right now, because it's not available on Spotify. You won't regret it. But I do think that Powell locks into something and creates something beautiful with that stuff. And I think that the only really unfortunate thing with the soundtrack is the fact that people will cue on the Williams stuff that he obviously used, and the fact that Williams created the Adventures of Han Solo theme, that people are in danger of overlooking stuff like Savarine Standoff, because it creates such a mood, so much intrigue, and even whether independently, but even I remember the music in the film really triggers this beautiful desire to, like, you wind up on their side immediately. Do you know how hard it is to wind up on their side immediately just from listening to the music? And I think it truly captures that.
Yeah, and there's a sense that haunting nature of the music, when they tell their story, it makes so much sense, you know, why their music sounds like that. And I think that, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, if you just cue off the fact that he uses these Williams things, you'd be missing the fact that, good thing you were listening and testing Allegiance.
Ugh.
Both use all the themes that Powell created so wonderfully. So that by the time you get to Testing Allegiance and it's wrapping up with that beautiful rendition again of the love theme and everything, and and then it begins to turn a little bit sour by the end, and you're like, it's the heartbreak of seeing, you know, Kira kind of turn her back on Solo and embrace Crimson Dawn, which, you know, there could be many, and we've talked about before, many different reasons for all of that. But the whole thing, and then you have the music as she's flying away and she's looking at Han, and there's that beautiful shot of just her behind, and you see the reflection of the window in the background, and I think it's going to even be the art for the show, but, you know, that moment is played so beautifully as she's passing by Han, and it's almost like a piece of her is kind of like being killed. It's just... the whole thing is just so great.
Listen, I know we're talking about the soundtrack, but again, I have to just talk about that scene, how beautiful it is, because Emilia Clarke does such a beautiful thing in that moment where Han is all the way down there on the beach. She's in the ship behind a window that's had like a security grate drop down, and she moves her lips as if she wants to say something to him. And it dies on her lips. And it cuts, like, and the music captures that. Just that gorgeous heartbreak moment of her realizing what she is giving up. You know, she is giving up someone who would be so devoted to her, so loving to her, so absolutely willing to do anything for her happiness. And I can't help but listen to that cue. And it really, it is heartbreaking to listen to, because you can, even without the visuals, you can tell what's happening. You know, it's like any great opera. You may not be able to understand the language, but you understand what is going on stage. And it's so gorgeous. It's so absolutely gorgeous. And the thing is, you've been a very big proponent of pointing out that track since, you know, the very beginning. Yeah. And you're again, you are correct. You are absolutely correct. It's a gorgeous
and
score.
That has been, you know, singled out, and I will just play that back to you whenever you want to disagree.
What one time in several years of friendship I've ever uttered those words.
It was one time.
Hold on to your victories. Hold on to your victories. But in all seriousness, it's re-listening to it and talking about the score, I'm so frustrated that I can't just turn this film on and go watch it right now. As we're recording this, it hasn't been released on home video yet. And I want to go shake somebody over at Disney Digital and just be like, please, I don't care. Double charge me. Fine. Just make it available to me today.
Well, you've already got the print. They'll have the digital come out first and then the physical disc. So they are trying to double charge.
Can I withstand the temptation long enough is the good question.
It is.
That's
going to
be a tough call.
You know, I got to say, you know, the way that he wraps it all up too with Dice and Roll, and it's just such a cheeky track to wrap up on, and it's so much fun, and just the fact that the soundtrack itself has been such a blast. I'm stuck with the fact that I want the complete score.
Yes.
For Solo, you know.
Yes.
In the same way, I want the complete score for all of the films, because the music, as we've mentioned over and over again here, and is the lifeblood of Star Wars, you know, the whole idea for George of these being silent films with music, and that you should be able to watch with the music and nothing else and know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think John Powell was able to do that with Solo and the music that he creates for this film. I believe that if they were to put a music only, you know, version of the film on, you could do that, and I'd really enjoy watching that the same way they did with The Last Jedi. So I hope that's something that they'll continue to do. I think mm-hmm. that would be really great, because it definitely proves exactly what Lucas was trying to do, is that you could watch these movies with just music and picture and know exactly what's happening even without the dialogue.
Amen, brother. Amen. And so that I can play curmudgeon and say, sort of like a piggyback on what you were saying, the fact that I don't have the end credits suite on this is disgraceful. There's no reason not to have it. And especially
and
in the digital age.
And the beauty of flying into that, that Star Wars theme there at the end, and then seeing it woven into the rest of the things. It is a travesty.
I would love to do a poll on Twitter at the Jedi Masters. Do you have the dice now that you've seen Solo?
Yeah.
Because that last shot, and of course, you know, Dice and Roll and everything. And that's another beautiful thing that the music calls back to, and that the film is framed by, is the dice. Hanging the dice mm-hmm. opens it, and the hanging dice ends it. And it's...
Yep.
That's a gorgeous, and of course, the hanging dice, obviously Kazdan had some sort of influence to have them come in and be a thing in episode 8 as well. But I really am frustrated that I don't have the complete score, just because that ending suite is gorgeous. It's wonderful. It's an amazing thing. I remember every time sitting in the theater, how weird is it that, unlike a Marvel movie, I wasn't sitting there just because I knew they were going to cram in an extra half a movie into the credits. I was sitting there just because I was enjoying the music, just the way I did with the original Star Wars movies. Yeah, that's good. I'm just going to listen to the music for a little bit because I like it, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because I still do that at home. You know, when a Star Wars movie ends, I don't just turn it off. I get up and I do the things that I need to do around the living room or whatever, and I just have the music play because it sounds it's gorgeous music. I love it. And the beauty of this is, and what I think is amazing is, as and I was thinking about this, you know, how different both of the Star Wars story soundtracks are in their tone and the way they sound, and but that they were able to create
things that to which I really ended up loving. And in the same way, again, where, and we've said it a trillion times, that, you know, the Clone Wars created something, and then Rebels created something where they had these themes referencing these different things and these different sounds that were adding to the audio landscape of Star Wars that felt just as much like Star Wars as the things that we, you know, grew up loving and then came to love, you know, with the prequels and all that. So I think that's a real testament to what was done in Rogue One and definitely here in Solo. So, you know, I don't even have a rating for this because it's just one. I would just say it's, you know, one thing of coaxium. You know, it's just one of those little, you know, pill pockets of coaxium, because that's exactly what this is. It's enough to power an entire Star Destroyer. So
I obviously agree with you,
John. If anybody wanted to catch up with you and talk about your love for the Star Wars soundtracks for Solo, we have both been doing a fun thing as we are recording this on our Facebooks. You know, talking about scores that have influenced us for 20 days. We've been posting scores that have influenced us, which has been a lot of fun. So, if anybody wants to talk to you about any of those things, where can they find you?
Well, not that anybody would want to find me, but you can find me as Kessel Junkie on Twitter and pretty much any service that you would want to find me on. Currently here on the network, Great Shot Kid is undergoing a slight revamp, so I'll be back there soon enough. We're doing something pretty special, so you know, keep your ears open for that. And of course, out there in the ether with my pal Craig on Wars with Nerds. But Matt, where can people find you?
You can find me over on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. I am here on this network, the Nerd Party Network, doing Owl Post with Drea Kaufman, talking all about Harry Potter each and every week as we dive in one chapter at a time with the series. It's been a blast. Hope you'll check it out. You can also find me over on the Trek FM Network doing a couple of shows. I do The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then I'm doing the General Geek Show over there, our local watering hole, as we talk about all the fandoms we love in the 602 Club. You'll often find John over there saddling up to the bar, talking about something fun. In fact, hint, hint, you may just hear us the day after this is released talking about Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I'm just saying. So, and then you can find me, last but not least, with my good friend Courtney, as we talk about films through the lens of faith over on a show called Cinema Stories. But, John, you know what? I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Well, that's just wonderful. You got them done right there this time, boss.